This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Neil Reynolds Podcast on NFL Game Pass. Feels like a special one because it's in person. Done so many of these on Zoom in recent weeks and months. I'm very pleased to be joined by Warwick Dunn, who was a former NFL Man of the Year, a Pro Bowl running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons. Mm. Warwick, a real-life 3D person. This is fantastic. Thank you for joining me.
I appreciate it.
I often start this podcast with asking about football growing up and what your memories were when you played. Did you play at a young age and was it a big part of your life?
No, I started playing when I was 7.
Okay.
And we just played street ball, pretty much. So for me, it was just really spending time outside and I was really tiny, small. So I was the last guy picked when I started playing football. And we just played tackle football in the grass. And, you know, after like a game or two, I wasn't the last kid picked anymore because no one could tackle me.
Right.
I was really small. So after that, I was always the first kid that was being picked. But again, you know, I was playing against giants at an early age. So, I just started playing. And I think that helped me develop my skill. I started playing football in the street.
Right.
So when you're playing touch football in the street, you're not trying to fall down, scrape your legs.
You don't want to get tackled by those big kids.
No, not at all. And, I think that helped me, develop skill where you try to stay balanced and so forth. So I think overall, I learned a lot of street ball early on before I learned like the fundamentals of the game.
When I wrote that question down on my notebook, I had this mental image in my head of you being the smallest kid, also of no one laying a finger on you. And it's interesting you say that because maybe it did set the groundwork because in the NFL you were a smaller running back, but you were elusive as well.
My whole life, I've always been the smallest guy playing the position, and I've always had to play against what I call them giants.
Right.
And I think that has just been a part of my mentality over the, just growing up, that no matter where I go, who I play against, they're always going to be bigger than me. Are they going to be better? Are they going to be faster? Are they going to be tougher or stronger? So I try to always use, have those things on my side mentally. And I think it really just prepared me, though, playing against, kids that were older. I played against a lot of older kids, too. Kids that were older and bigger, I think that prepared me for my journey.
Once you got into more structured football, so going into whatever that was, youth football and then high school, was it always running back or did you play other positions?
No, in high school, my senior year, I started at quarterback. I was an option quarterback.
Okay.
Little league, I started playing quarterback, then I played tailback, then I played linebacker, and I played defensive back.
Okay.
I played safety. I moved around. In my sophomore year in high school, I started at fullback in the state championship game.
Okay.
So, I moved around
moved
a little
around
bit,
a
played
bit.
Flanker. And I think the biggest thing for me, just growing up, I always wanted to play running back. Tony Dorsett was my idol.
Okay.
But when I turned 11 years old, a guy who I call Pops, for me, he's my little league coach, and I met him when I was 10 years old. And he said, you can run, but if you want to score touchdowns, you're going to have to catch the ball. So he moved me from running back to receiver, and I had to play receiver when I was 11 years old. I had to learn how to catch. And I think that, that was probably the biggest thing for me is that he forced me to learn how to catch.
Become more versatile, rounded player. Down the road again, all these little things you see, that's why the journey is interesting. Things that you build onto your arsenal as you get to the NFL.
Yeah, if you think about it, he's thinking about not today as a player. We're thinking about how can we be better at this moment. He's thinking about, he saw something in me. He's thinking years down the road. Mm. And, I was just thankful that, that he moved me. He said, if you're going to score a touchdown, you're going to do it by catching the ball. And I just looked back and was like, wow, okay, well, I had to start catching the ball. So I started catching bombs. I was like catching post routes and stuff. And we were calling audibles at the line of scrimmage when I was 11 years old. I mean, wow. So, you know, I learned a lot about the game early on, and I think that just helped me just really just be much more open to, you know, different offenses and also understanding defenses. So I learned a lot earlier.
So I'm getting the sense you learned a lot of the football things that you took to the NFL from a young age. What did you learn off the field from your mum that maybe now shapes your life after the NFL? How important was she to your who you are today and how you were when you were in the NFL?
Well, I tell people the biggest lesson, you know, I just looking back, I mean, I learned so much from her because my mom was a state champion at high hurdles.
Right.
You know, she was very competitive. You know, but my freshman year of high school, I went from public school to private school and all boys school, predominantly white Catholic school. So the school was called Catholic High School in Baton Rouge. And I remember going in the first 9 weeks. I mean, I would go to school and I didn't bring home books. You know, the best class I had, I tell people, was lunch because the fried chicken and all those things. And my mom, you know, she challenged me because I didn't make the grades to finish playing my freshman year of football. And I actually had like a 0.9 GPA. It's like, how do you even get a 0.9? So, but she gave me an option. She said, you can stay here and prove to people that you can do it, or I could just take you out. You know, you need to figure out the path that you want to go. And you know, I just took that as a challenge. Mm. And I was like, you know what, Mom, I'm going to stay. I'm going to prove to you and everyone else that I could do it. And I stayed. And, you know, I just started doing the things I was doing when I was in public school. I started actually bringing home books to read and studying and stuff. And, you know, so I gradually brought my grades up, and then my sophomore year, I started off the first 9 weeks with almost a 3.0. I think I was 2.8, 2.9.
And that's because she just laid down the law.
Yeah, she's just like, listen, I could take you out, or you could prove to these people that you can do it, right? And, you know, she challenged me. And I think from that challenge, you know, I had to grow up earlier at an early age because she was always working, and I was the oldest of six. So I think she figured that I could do it. She knew how to get me to do the things that she wanted me, that I needed to do. So by challenging me, I think she really pushed some buttons, and she, you know, just helped me be better overall. So now everything I do in my life, you know, I think about, you know, that one moment that, you know, my life could be a totally different. And that was the deciding factor in the life that I have today because I got a really good education. I got a chance to play at a really good, graduate and play at a good university. And then that gives you exposure to play, you know, professional. So, you know, decisions determine our paths a lot of times in life.
Your mum was a police officer. We don't have to get into the details. Yeah. I'm sure it's very difficult to talk about. She was murdered, and then you're at a young age becoming the eldest, the head of the family.
Yeah.
How do you balance that with, I need to go to college and play football, I need to try and take this path, but the family's there.
Yeah.
Obviously a tremendously traumatic period, and then you have to try and stay on that path to the NFL.
Well, my whole life, I would tell you, my focus has always been my family, right? I mean, sports have always played a part in my life, and believe it or not, we all played sports. We all ran track in the summertime, so we did things together as a family. But growing up, I was the head of, you know, I can't say I was the head of the household because I was still a teenager, but yeah, my mom really relied on me, so I had to grow up early and really mature and understand that life isn't just about sports, it's about family. And when my mom was shot and killed, you know, I just took the responsibilities that, you know, I got to take care, you know, my brothers and sisters, her kids. And I was determined to do that, but I also had support of my grandmother and my pops and stuff. But I made a decision where I said, hey, I'm going to stay home and I'm not going to go. I'll go to LSU, stay home so I could be with you guys. And they told me, no, you need to go and live your life, right? You still have your own dreams and stuff. Go wherever you want to go. And I was like, okay. So I had support from the community and my family, and I decided to leave and go to Florida State University. But yeah, even though that I left, I was parenting from afar.
Right.
I
mean, yeah.
I was always on the road. I was always going back home, calling home, trying to discipline over the phone. If you don't do it, wait till I get back.
Must be so hard though, because a student athlete, you've got studies, you've got weight room, you've got practice, you've got games. I mean, we hear about the days of a student athlete, and then add in parent on top of that.
It was crazy. Well, you know, I can tell you, I lift weights, but I didn't like lifting weights.
Okay.
You know, I didn't, you know, and I did things because I had to do that, you know, and so I was accustomed to doing things that I had to do, and that's pretty much like has been my whole mantra. You do things you have to do even though you don't love it. But in the end, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And so I sacrificed a lot, right? My family, first and foremost, after my mom, they were my focus. Then I did everything. And believe it or not, while in college, I would go home every free weekend that I had, no matter, however, I just drove home to make sure that I was with those guys. But when I got drafted, you know, my younger three were in going to high school.
Right.
And they weren't doing well in school. So my second year in the league, I just won Rookie of the Year. Second year in the league, I moved all of them with me in Tampa into the house with me and says, you know what, you guys are not doing well in school. You're going to come and stay with me. And they were mad. I'm sure they were mad because I'm taking away from their friends, but I felt like I was responsible. Hmm. I'm responsible for them, so I got to make sure you guys get an education, right? Graduate from high school. And I moved them to Tampa with me. And I can tell you the experience, it was rough trying to be a parent and also play professional football.
Yeah.
That was tough. That was tough.
Let's talk some football then. So you go through Florida State, your first round draft pick of the Buccaneers. Was there a welcome to the NFL moment? You know, like in practice or in a game where you're like, oh, this isn't college anymore. They either run faster or they hit harder. Or was there one thing that kind of stood out where you're like, this is a different level now?
Well, I knew that it was a different level. I don't think anything, I can't remember anything crazy happening that stood out. You know, the one thing that I think I did is just growing up, I asked questions, and I went to people that played in the league a long time. Mm. For an example, is a linebacker named Kevin Hardy.
Kevin Hardy. Yeah.
Nope.
Who are we thinking of?
Yeah. No. He's gonna kill me.
Hardy Nickerson.
Nickerson. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm tripping.
That's all right. I'm tripping. It was a Kevin Hardy, but there's also
Hardy
Nickerson.
Yeah, yeah. So I went to Hardy, and you know, I just asked him, what did you do to have longevity, to be a great pro, and those things, and I just started spending more time with them. I kept asking questions. What did you do to work out? How did you take care of your body and those things? And he gave me knowledge. And I took that knowledge. It's like, hey, I want to play a long time. I'm not the biggest guy. You know, I went in, I was 170-some pounds. So when I got drafted. So you think, it's like, how am I going to play at this level and not get destroyed by these big guys?
Yeah.
And I think over the course of time, from what he told me, I put a lot of that stuff into practice, and it just helped me be the ultimate pro. Because it's the little things, right?
That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the little things that separates you from being a good player, to a great player, elite player. And I just always try to do those little things.
This is Ryan Jensen, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast. Hello, everyone. This is producer Gary. Now, normally at this stage of the show, it's Neil that you hear who sits down to tell you all about our partnership with NFL Game Pass throughout the 2021 season. However, it's the last game week of the NFL London game, so Neil is currently off having fun at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium where he's looking important, he's feeling important, and he's probably being a bit too important to sit and give you this message. Obviously, I jest somewhat, but Neil is very busy as he gets ready for that final London game. So I'm just here to give you a little bit of what's in store on NFL Game Pass this weekend and how you can sign up and get to see all the action. So this weekend in the NFL is all about rivalries. I just mentioned there the Jacksonville Jaguars are facing the Miami Dolphins at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But then that matchup is also followed by the oldest rivalry in NFL history. It's not happening in London, but this time in Chicago as the Packers go to visit the Bears. We've also got the Chargers at the Ravens to provide a stage for the 2020 best rookie quarterback versus the 2019 MVP. And there's also the rivalry, which is only played out every 4 years, as the Dallas Cowboys take on the New England Patriots at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. And finally, to close out Sunday, capping off 12 hours of straight football, will be two teams in desperate need of a win as Russell Wilson's Seattle Seahawks take on Big Ben's Pittsburgh Steelers. You can catch every touchdown from every game every Sunday on NFL Red Zone, and this Sunday is no different. You can watch your favourite team live and also watch two games at once using the dual screen option. All this and more is available on NFL Game Pass, where if you head over to nflgamepass.com right now, you can sign up and get 25% off. And as Neil likes to remind you every week on NFL Game Pass, you can watch this episode of the podcast along with every episode from season 2. So just head over to nflgamepass.com and sign up now and get streaming that action. Now, let's get back to Neil's conversation.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Did you pride yourself on versatility? Because I think back to you and I think, first of all, how hard it must have been to defend. Because you, one minute you've got Mike Allstock coming at you who's like 245, 250, maybe even more than that?
Well, at that time, he was like 240, 250. Yeah.
And then suddenly it's you coming and no one can get near you. How difficult that must be. But you must have prided yourself on being able to do a bit of everything.
Yeah. Well, I did. I thought I was versatile and I wanted to do that. Even the Buccaneers thought I was versatile coming out. I mean, they wanted me. I did kickoff return, punt return as well. And I played, you know, running back. So it was a lot, but, you know, I think life is about adjustments. Mm. And, you know, once I got there and I knew that I had to compete with Mike for carries, you know, I was too early. So they weren't used to, like, having a small guy try to be a feature back. So it was more about the pound, big guys, 230, 240 guys. So I had to go and prove myself that I could take the pounding. I had to prove that I can play at an elite level, you know? And I think just over the course of time, I think people saw that a couple of years later, they started to understand that, you know, size for me didn't matter. I mean, I can run inside, I can run outside, I can catch the ball out the backfield, I could do a lot of things. And then when you're playing against a Reggie White, a Kevin Green, you know, you got to block those guys on the end.
I've got to ask them because I've seen Reggie White throw people literally in the Super Bowl, throw 300-pound linemen with one arm, with that hook, throw them out of the road, basically. Yeah. I've been on the stage with the late, great Kevin Green doing one of these events around the UK games. And I asked him what it's like to sack a quarterback. And he pretended to sack me, but he actually almost, he cracked my back. He pushed me so far back, he had his head under my Adam's apple, and just the scariest, most intense guy. So two legends who are sadly no longer with us. What was it like to block those two then? How did you just go low and close your eyes? Or?
Well, you know, I can say that it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun at all. But, you know, two great individuals, Hall of Famers. Mm. You know, Kevin Green called me little fella. It's like, hey, you was a good little player. You was a good little player. And, you know, it's basically, I just got in their way.
Just try to get it.
I was getting away.
Just a pest.
I wasn't going to, you know, I learned early on, it's like me running and trying to cut them, that's not going to do anything.
No.
You know what I mean, let me just get in their way and occupy their time. And that's what I did. Whatever I had to do, if I had to run up, turn my back, and whatever it was.
I love it. No technique. Oh, just get in the way.
It was just like survival. It's like my job was really, you know, give the quarterback had 3 seconds. 1, 2, 3. 3 seconds, that's it. The ball better be out.
Yeah.
Right? If it's a quick step drop. 5 seconds if it's a 5-step drop.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just getting their way. And I was really blocking those guys on quick routes, 3-step routes.
Yeah.
They're trying to get the ball out. So I was just getting their way. And I tried to cut I tried to cut both of them. And one time they jumped over me, and they would just laugh. And another time is that I would try to fake, and I would just, you know, hit them up. But, you know, it's just one of those things, man, that, you know.
I love the fact the technique can go out the window sometimes in the heat of the battle.
Oh, it's about survival.
Yeah, exactly.
Reggie White, it was, you know, I remember cutting him, and I hit him in his, you know, the bad portion. He was like, "Oh, little fella, you got me. And I was just like, okay, all right. The next time we ran a play, like a couple plays later, same thing, coming right back at him. And instead of me going low, I faked and I just tried to jump up and just turn my back to him and get in his way. And he's just laughing. I mean, it's just like, but he knew that, you know, he was trying to protect his knees.
Yeah.
And those guys knew that I would try to take them, you know, cut them down. So I had to play my part.
The time you spent in the league as a Pro Bowl player, it must be stories like that and things like that that you kind of, when you get together with other players, it must be just little stories that you tell. That it's not always the touchdown. It's not always the catch.
It's the little things.
Yeah.
It's the little things. And it's some guys, you see them and they always bring up a certain thing
that happened
in the game, or, man, you got me on this play, that. And, you know, I think guys who played against me will probably always tell you that they couldn't get a good hit on me. No one could square me up. I was always getting down, you know. And
I was going to ask you about that, actually. Is that, given your size, and you did have that, you were able to be a workhorse. You had a 200-yard rushing game against Dallas, right?
Against the Cowboys.
Yeah, 200 yards. So that's like a workhorse day. So did you have a way of not taking the big hits, or was it just almost sort of kind of subconscious? Because you would think that there would have been more injuries and more stuff where you're sidelined.
Yeah, well, when I ran with a lot of instincts. I didn't predetermine anything.
Yeah.
And I think I just had a really good feel for where guys were going to be. I, like I said, I understood defenses, so I had an idea of where everyone was at. And when I ran the ball, I knew I always had one guy that I had to make miss.
Right.
So, you know, I just wanted to make sure my guys did their part. And from that, though, you're running and you just start having a feel for things and you would get down. It's hard to tell you, you know, what I did and why.
You wouldn't be able to describe it.
I was just very instinctive. Mm. And the main thing I did, though, because I was so small, I used to get down in a fetal position. I used to always try to ball up.
Okay.
When I was getting down, just ball up so that, you know, the guys will be flying around. It's a lot different from day.
They're flying over the top of you, probably.
Flying over and they still hitting you, or they spearing you, those things. And I used to always try to protect myself.
Yeah.
And that's getting down to fetal position and just really having a sense of awareness. And believe it or not, hey, when the journey's over, get down. I used to always get down.
Yeah, I mean, you see that even now. Just see so many fumbles from running backs that come sort of from, like, they're fighting for a half an inch and they're a foot off the ground, and that's when the ball comes out.
Yeah.
You go, maybe live to fight another day.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. You know, when the journey's over,
yeah,
get down, right? You gotta figure out, like, how do you get to the next play? And,
right.
And believe it or not, I didn't just run out of bounds every time I went to the sideline. I was told by even Coach Bowden, you know, take the shoulder and continue running upfield when you're going out of bounds.
Right.
He always wanted contact. Mm. And so for me, I never just ran out of bounds. I always tried to run, protect the ball, and I would at least be hitting with
as
my shoulder
as
I was going out. So you do those little things to continue to try to get that extra half inch, whatever it is that could help you and the team.
You talked about the physicality of when you were playing, and it doesn't feel that long ago that you were playing. We all remember watching you play, but It feels like it's changed the game so much since then. And I wonder, given how versatile you were, I just wonder what sort of yardage you'd have put up in today's NFL. The amount they use these running backs out the backfield the screens and all of that stuff.
It's crazy. You know, you think about that, it's like if the game was the way it was today, I mean, when I played, and it's like you said, they're much more versatile, much more open. They spread people out a lot more, you know, and I think the game is just adapted over the years.
Yeah.
And, you know, this game is really looking for versatile players who could do a play multiple positions and not just running back, but you spin the running back in a slot a lot of times or a receiver. They run punts and kickoffs back. I mean, I think I could play, but today you can also play a long time. I mean, they don't practice as much. So it's not that pounding that we went through when I was playing those tour days for like 2-3 weeks. I mean, that was brutal. Today it's a lot different. But it's also, I think it makes it harder because you have to practice your craft. To get better, you have to practice on the, and like I said earlier, the little things that was really was separation. Mm. So, you know, if a guy's not on the practice field, you got to be in the film room. You got to be doing the little things to help yourself figure out that edge. So it's I think it's a lot harder for guys today. To really take their game to the next level because, like I said, it's the little things. But if I had the same skill set and the mindset that I had when I was playing back then, it would be interesting.
Definitely would have been fun to watch. A couple more just to finish up. Obviously, when you were still playing, coming towards the end of your time, there was Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans. You took it upon yourself to kind of rally the league, right?
Well,
can you tell me what happened there with that? And you were trying to fundraise for that and went out to all the players?
Hurricane Katrina hit, and I was born in New Orleans, but, you know, I was raised in Baton Rouge, but also know guys across the league. Everybody has been, a lot of guys have been in New Orleans, partied there, hung out there, Bourbon Street and so forth. And, you know, just the devastation that hit there and all the people that were displaced, it's like, well, man, I got to do something. And thinking about my home state, but also just thinking about the people that are affected, it's like, you know, I'm going to give up my game check for, you know, people there.
Yeah.
So I challenged all the guys in the league. It's like, hey, we all have lived, you know, a lot of us played there, visited, and, you know, went different events there. It's, you know, it's like, why not, you know, let's support the people that are in need. I mean, we all live good lives. I mean, why not, you know, let's raise some money. So we raised a lot of money and helped a lot of people in New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina. So, and I wanted to give to an organization that was on the grounds there, not the big national organizations.
You didn't want it filtered off. You wanted to,
I wanted to go right to the individuals who needed the assistance, who could do the work. And
that's
what important.
That's what you do with your kind of off the field charitable work now, right? You're very hands on with that. The Homes for Holidays. Yeah. Before we started filming, you said everyone knows me as the guy who gives away homes. That's, you know, we remember you as a great player as well, but it's to your credit that people do remember you for this amazing stuff you've done off the field, giving homes to single parent families, building them, funding them, handing over the keys. So scoring a touchdown in a big game or handing over the keys, is it not even close?
Well, it's not close.
No.
Handing the keys is that's life changing, and you know that was my mom's dream. The reason my mom, I think she worked so much and she lost her life is because she was trying to put a roof over our head, and not being able to achieve that. You know, I just took her dream and said, hey, it's other parents, single parents that are going through something similar, so why not try to help them? And, you know, so the charity, we give $5,000 down payment assistance and we fully furnish the homes. So the, You know, we put food, furniture, linens, garden tools, TVs, computers, you know, all the way down to the toothbrush wow. in the home. So pretty much all, they just have to bring their clothes. Yeah, but most people just, you know, think we give away houses. We don't. They have a mortgage. Right. They have to pay a mortgage. We try to help people that are helping themselves, right? We try to give a hand up and not a hand out. So it's been productive. We've been almost, it's gone on 24 years. November will be 24 years. Yeah. And we're up to 194 single parent families that we've helped.
Wow.
So, you know, we're trying to grow and just get better. And now we got financial literacy programs. We have a SCULP program, Healthy Food Initiative program, and we got a Hartsville Community Service scholarship program as well. So we just try to help people that are helping themselves.
It is fantastic. This one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast and tell your story was not just the player, but the person that helps others, but also you have so many strands. So you played for the Falcons, obviously, then you went back to Tampa, finished your career, but you're a minority owner with the Atlanta Falcons, right?
I am.
Would you like to see more black owners, more black coaches in the NFL? I know it's a kind of big topic.
Yeah, but it's a big topic. But I think diversity is important, right? It's key to just the growth and having a balance. I mean, you know, you have a lot of people that are deserving but don't get the opportunity. So we just want to open up the eyes and create the opportunity so that people get their chance to prove if they're worthy or not.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's just how it goes. But, you know, I'm a minority owner in Atlanta Falcons, and I can't say, I don't know if it's another one.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's one more, I think. But, you know, without this opportunity came because of a relationship with Mr. Blank. And he's just a great individual. And, I mean, you know, I'm just thankful for the opportunity.
Yeah.
But you also have to be able to, I had to do such background checks and all these things to become a partner, but you also have to be financially stable. And you got to think, I wasn't the highest paid guy at my position. And so I managed, you know, my dollars really well, but also I had to give money away. Now it's like it's gone. I just gave it away. But it's been a really good investment. And, you know, whenever that turns over, it's been a great investment. But you want people of all walks of life to have opportunity to achieve things that they don't think they can achieve.
Also a player to have that impact on ownership as well. You can take it right from the locker room. And what's...
Well, you got to think, when Mr. Blank came in, he had just bought the team when I came to Atlanta and was playing. And, you know, he's learned a lot about the game over the years.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I gave him a different perspective from a player. The way that I view the game is going to be totally different than the way that you view it and he views it. So what I see is obviously it's going to be a lot different. Now it's a business side and it's also, you know, the game side. And you got to have the individuals that, you know, can help balance out to give you a good understanding so you can make the right decisions. And we're moving forward. I mean, we hired our first, African-American GM.
Yep.
You know, so we're trying to really be intentional about the diversity that we need as an organization. And I mean, that really credits Mr. Blank. I mean, he's the guy behind it.
Fantastic. I was going to ask, what's next? It's been a fascinating life, a fascinating career, but let's save that for another episode because this has been great.
Oh, yeah.
That could be another episode in its own right. I think we're still in fist bump era, aren't we?
Yeah.
So
it's all good. It's
thank
all
you,
good.
Warwick. That was fascinating.
It. Thank you.
And thank you for joining me on the Neil Reynolds podcast here on NFL Game Pass, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. Listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels.
Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.